Okay.
Hello and welcome to our podcast. This is Selena Tang and I'm here with my partner, Danlin Brennan.
Hello.
And we're here to tell you the story about our project for the ALT-REU, which stands for Alternative Research Experience for Undergraduates. This was a unique 8-week-long project-based program led by PI Dr. Christoph Teuscher, professor from the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, along with Mackenzie Gray, program coordinator and soon-to-be PhD candidate in biology and biology education research, both from Portland State University. Thanks to both of you for making this a fun way to learn remotely, engage with other like-minded students, and play a role in bettering society.
The focus of this program was to give students like us an opportunity to dive into computational modeling by taking ownership of our projects.
At the same time, we would serve the local community by building modeling tools to answer some challenging questions.
So, Selena, what school are you at and what are you studying there?
I am a rising junior studying mechanical engineering at the University of Washington.
And I'm a rising senior studying biomedical physics and chemistry at Portland State University. Of course, our team wouldn't have gotten as far as we had within the 8-week period without help from our mentors in academia and industry.
We were able to interview some of the mentors who have helped us along our journey. They had a lot to share about why they do what they do and how the impact of this kind of research is important to them.
Looking at it from a different perspective. So they've been thinking about how particles have been deposited onto roofs and how roofs and green roof plants could help. Sorry about the dog in the background. This always happens. I can't. We're being recorded. Sancho!
It's okay. That's Dr. Starry, our research mentor leading the EcoRoof air quality team.
Sure, good afternoon. My name is Alyssa Starry, and I'm an associate professor in the Honors College at Portland State University.
We also worked with David Evans, an ML manager from Google, who helped us with the coding and implementation side of the project.
My name is David Evans. I am an engineering manager at Google. I work primarily with AI and ML for conversations in the Android Messages product.
And so what has your role been in the Green Roof Research Group?
Well, this project is part of a collaborative effort between myself in the Honors College, Todd Rosensteel in the biology department, and Elliot Gall in the engineering department, mechanical engineering department. It's an interdisciplinary project that is trying to investigate how eco-roofs are affecting air quality, and in particular, indoor space, well, including both indoor and now this work that you're doing kind of expands it a little bit to think about how green roofs might also be affecting outdoor air quality.
Okay, so the title of our project is Urban Air Quality Modeling, Evaluating Impacts of Eco-Roofs on Urban Air Quality in Portland, Oregon. Danlin, this project has actually been your passion for a couple years now. Can you set the stage for us and talk about why this research question is so important?
Well, I've been working as a research assistant for a few years now with an interdisciplinary group of ecologists, biologists, chemists, and engineers to investigate the ecophysiology of the plants in urban spaces, specifically green roofs, or what people call eco-roofs, which host a variety of organisms, mainly plants. Our research group has been measuring emissions from those plants found on typical green roofs. We hope to discover some interesting findings that can help guide current and future research in sustainable environmental engineering.
A little bit about your perspective on the current state of research in this field?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about this project because we know very little about how plants affect air quality generally. And I think this creates a unique chance to really think about how specifically green roof plants are affecting air quality. And as you're aware, I have spent a large part of my career caring about eco-roofs and their role in managing stormwater and also creating green infrastructure in cities. So this is a new and exciting direction for research that I'm really happy to pursue.
Sustainability is a word we hear a lot about, and it can mean so many different things to different people. I'd like to think it's safe to say that collectively, as a whole society, we want to live in healthy environments. That can be challenging in urban spaces for a number of reasons. As climate change drives the temperature up and alters ecosystems and further displaces communities, we have to make critical decisions about how we will build our future environment to best adapt to these inevitable changes.
Simulation of this scale that can assist in modifying quality of life, potentially, for people who live in an area, I think is really important because we don't, you know, these things happen on sort of human lifetime scale, right, as it stands. So right now, our best way of understanding the way that these affect people is to sort of look at people who have lived under particular conditions for long periods of time and to sort of see if there was any effect there. In this case, we could take what we currently know and sort of simulate that and extrapolate out those things. And then that really helps urban planning and people who are coming up with how to design these spaces for the people who live there. It really helps them kind of figure out what are good decisions and what are potentially bad decisions without having to wait 50 years just to see if, you know, everybody's healthier. We could kind of project that out based on what we already know.
And now more than ever, these decisions about green infrastructure investment need to be well investigated so that we as a community can optimize for healthy urban spaces and environmental equity within our cities. Previous studies suggest that not all species of plants are created equal, in such that certain species may decrease air quality due to their emission of biogenic volatile organic compounds, or BVOCs.
Do you have any thoughts about how our specific project, meaning like the simple one-dimensional model to investigate the air quality impacts of the biogenic volatile organic compounds that are emitted from green roofs, how does that fill the gap in the current research?
The bulk of research that's been done so far in green plants has looked at how they, how air quality in the form of particulates, air pollution in the form of particulates has been deposited onto green roof plants. But we know less and less about how plants can actually produce volatiles and what that means for not only outdoor air quality, but also, and kind of in conflict with what I said earlier, indoor air quality, because those plants are often situated right next to the HVAC intake. And so we really need to have a better understanding of what that air is comprised of as it enters into the building and even, you know, our larger atmosphere.
The design and organization of urban environments is guided by people, decision makers like city planners. And now, more than ever, these decisions about green infrastructure investment need to be well investigated so that we as a community can optimize for healthy urban spaces and environmental equity within our cities.
And you know, I'm still very new to the study of ecology and environmental engineering, but to me, this project has been a major eye-opener about the air quality challenges in my home city of Portland and what assumptions we need to start challenging about the best ways to combat urban pollution. And it's allowed me to start taking my engineering background and see how I can apply that to make a positive impact through designing green infrastructure. I'm at the stage where I'm choosing what sector of mechanical engineering I want to specialize in, and working on this topic has given me more clarity about the ways I can contribute to sustainability as an engineer.
Mindset between that and like the world of the algorithms, right? So like the computer science algorithm end of the spectrum. And there, you know, the physical world, the real world, I'll say, is very truly analog in that everything is a curve, right? There are no clock cycles out in the world. And I think that like the thing about fusing the disciplines together is really to bring that translation to life, right? Like a computer simulation will literally never be more accurate than the real world. We all know that. And I think that the tolerance for that difference is much higher on the computer science side, right? Because we're sort of talking about errors that are really small. And I know that it's a little harder on the physical sciences side because those errors add up as you scale back up, right? And I think that like those meeting the disciplines together is really the best way to say like, okay, instead of sort of trying to imagine a set of experiments to run, right? And just setting them up and hoping to get them all put together and then hoping on the other end of those experiments that you're getting data that either confirms or denies your hypothesis or that you're getting data at all. The idea, I think, that of pulling these things together is to take, you know, I think it's really good to take all of the understanding that you have and sort of create a fake world, right? And create a fake universe and see, like, test your understanding under the fake conditions as much as possible, because that might help you actually design better real world experiments, better real world data gathering, and really identify areas where, like, the data that are available is weaker than you might have thought, right? Because under simulation, you find out that, like, its effect seems to be much smaller, and you need to really, like, instead of going out and planting a million more whatevers in order to, like, increase the emissions rate of some BVOC, you could just go into sort of like your fake simulated world and really just crank it up as if every last surface on the planet is some type of BVOC emitter, and see what happens and see if it's in the ballpark, and then try to understand if there's a missing piece. And you could do that without having to go out into the field, or without having to have, like, you know, an abandoned building to look at, or a field to grow a specific type of thing in. You can really narrow down what you're looking for on a much, much shorter time scale, just by sort of like modeling out your math and modeling out the environment a little bit.
Currently, very sophisticated models and expensive software exists to model chemical interactions and dispersions throughout an urban environment. So how would a simple 1B model compare to those? And could it be used to help make these kinds of decisions?
And the other thing that I really enjoy about your project is that it is applicable at different scales, right? So, you know, the model that you're working on is looking, I think, is starting with something very simple at the roof scale. But I think that, you know, especially because we know that Portland has adopted a green roof, basically a green roof requirement as part of the Central City 2035 plan, we know that we're going to be seeing more and more green roofs in the downtown area, and your work can help us understand the implications of this policy decision.
So computational modeling is what I like to think of as math at work, math that serves a purpose. To me, that's the best kind of math. Selena, how would you describe your thoughts on computational modeling?
You know the saying, how you know you completely understand something if you can teach it to someone else? There's this computer science-y equivalent of that, which says you completely understand something if you can teach it to a computer. So the journey towards making a functional model is kind of this mechanism to really learn about a topic and understand it well, and then apply that to exploring the scenarios we want. And I think that's really useful.
Using experimentally determined fluxes of BVOCs from the different green roof species, we hope to build a simpler tool for planners and engineers to use to help the decision-making process when it comes to choosing the appropriate plant species for the green infrastructure project.
So the journey towards making a functional model is kind of this mechanism to really learn about a topic and understand it well, and then apply that to exploring the scenarios we want. And I think that's really useful.
So with these tools, we can simulate the potential impacts of introducing green infrastructure and look at these overlooked parameters, such as plant emissions, to see if they really do impact air quality in the way that we would expect.
Yeah, so what I really like, another thing that I really like about this project is that it does two things, right? So it advances our theoretical understanding of how plants affect air quality, while also addressing supply concern, right? So what plants should we install on green roofs? And you're going to be, you know, not only are these data that we have so very unique and valuable, but you'll be using the model to kind of understand the implications of this very unique data set.
Well, neither of us are computer science majors, and building up a computational model from scratch is no small task. This is why we needed some expert guidance to the technical details of building that algorithmic framework.
Kind of point out areas where, like, we can grab some efficiency here, we might want to structure this way. Let's always look at 1 second, because, you know, then this variable can disappear because it's always one. So it's been kind of neat to work so closely.
To address the need for an easy-to-use, accessible tool to analyze the effect of green roofs on air quality, we created a simple mathematical model simulating the transport of plant emissions in a 1D space with partial differential equations and their numerical solutions.
One-dimensional means we analyze the urban space that we chose as a series of volumes stacked on top of each other, like a tower of boxes, imagine.
The complex interactions between the many parameters we plan to build into the simulation include microclimate data,
like wind speed, direction, temperature, and relative humidity.
Solar radiation data,
because some of the chemical reactions occur in the presence of sunlight.
I'm sorry. Okay, I'm good. Emission rates from traffic,
anthropogenic sources and biogenic sources from the green roofs.
Deposition,
or the settling of particulate matter onto rough surfaces like leaves. So we hope to develop a tool that offers enough complexity to be comparable to the outputs that you'll see in the sophisticated models, but also simple enough in terms of the usability.
But like, it doesn't work that way, right? It's the models are tools to help you understand how well you understand the thing that you understand. Like, it's there to tell you, like, here is how far off of reality you are, right? If you have come up with a set of equations that come close to approximating the real world interactions of things, and you run those through a model at a really high scale, and you see them blown up to scales that you couldn't possibly directly measure, and you notice that something's not quite right, then like that's the model saying, like, I did what you said and I'm not sure if it's right. And the model is actually not even the one telling you that. The model's saying, like, you told me to do X, I did X. And then you as a human, you are the expert. You look at it and you say, ooh, this doesn't look quite right. Or it looks great, and it's surprising how great it looks. But the model is a tool just to make it so that, you know, your understanding of the physical world can be accelerated, basically.
So with these tools, we can simulate the potential impacts of introducing green infrastructure and look at these overlooked parameters, such as plant emissions, to see if they really do impact air quality in the way that we would expect.
And what might that expectation be?
Well, it's complicated, and it's not all good news, to be honest.
Why is that?
So each plant has its own signature emission, if you want to think about it that way. It's a mix of all the different chemical species that are coming out of the plant.
So kind of like a person.
Yeah, like we all smell different for the most part, right? We all emit a cloud of chemical soup that is unique to our hygiene products that we use, the scents that we enjoy, the food that we eat. It's the same for plants, soil, and most materials. Of course, some plants are stinkier, as I like to think about it, than others, as we all know and have experienced when we stop to smell the roses or enjoy the aroma of well-spiced food. All of those chemicals are freely floating in the air, and when certain chemicals interact with each other, they can form larger particles. And some of those we call particulate matter, or specifically PM2.5 or PM10, because those are especially problematic when it comes to human health. So we tend to track those. A lot of research is done looking at concentrations of those two sizes of particulate matter. And then there's other harmful species that are a product of the reactions of these chemicals, like ozone.
These chemicals are so dangerous that the EPA keeps regulations in place to limit human exposure to them.
So that's why it's important to track potential exposures. With the best of intentions, it's still possible to create more of these harmful chemicals when we bring in certain species of plants that provide the ingredients for worse conditions than just traffic pollution.
Yeah, and I was actually studying up on this a little bit last night, right? So people have made inventories of the kinds and types of volatiles that different plants are producing, but a lot of these inventories do not include the succulent plants. And so being able to couple your model with some experimental data on volatiles produced by succulents is going to be really valuable theoretically.
So there are a lot of sophisticated models out there that simulate mass transport and chemical reactions, like MEGAN and ENVIMET, and they all have really steep learning curves and paywalls. That exclusivity limits access to academics, wealthy companies, and organizations. So more tools are needed to make decisions based on the most current science. And the easier those tools are to use and access, the more we can all contribute to the quality of building healthy and sustainable urban environments.
How do you hope this will benefit you as a Portland resident?
Wow, that's a good question. You know, you have no choice. Residents have no choice about the air that they take in, right? You just are subjected to what they give you. What is given, what is in your environment. And that has a huge environmental justice implications. And so for me as a Portland resident, this work and its contribution to understanding the air that we breathe and potential management implications makes me think about what this work is doing for my health.
More research is needed to investigate these questions via a simulation of the spaces that are most vulnerable to public health disparities. A brand new publication in the journal Science shows that there's been an overall improvement in air quality over the past 36 years. Yet, there remains demographic disparity, where the most polluted areas continue to be the most polluted in terms of PM2.5 concentrations. That predominantly affects the health and quality of life for low socioeconomic status communities, which also disproportionately affects minorities, immigrants, and people of color. These populations are more vulnerable to negative health outcomes related to environmental pollution. And that's also reflected in disproportionate numbers of cases of respiratory disease and susceptibility to the current coronavirus pandemic. With more tools available to more people, we can investigate the application of these technologies, such as eco-roofs, to improve air quality. And we should be taking a look at the most extreme living conditions within our society to inform environmental equity in planning and investment.
About the variety of plants and their different rates of isoprene emissions, because you know we don't know why, but some plants emit more or less isoprene compared to others. And as we get those data, this model is going to help us understand then which plants we might want to select.
Like you have this power now to really see how the world reacts to extreme conditions, all because the large and the very small have been modeled into a much more accurate representation of what the real world is like. So, but people are great too. I mean, clean air rules. Go clean air. Go healthy people. As well, everybody likes it when the buildings don't look all gross all the time from being disgustingly filthy. And I'm from the Rust Belt, so, you know, I grew up in an area with horrible air. So it might be bad for inhaler manufacturers. Screw them. I don't know. Is that good? Was that a good answer? I don't know.
We wanted to thank all of the other mentors that helped us along the way. Dr. Elliot Gall, Dr. Todd Rosensteel, Pradeep Ramasubramanian, and Dr. Christopher Budenhoff. Thank you for answering all our questions and contributing to our learning success during this alternative RU.